Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
Families have a lot going on. Let Ollie help manage the mental load with new cognitive health supplements for everyone 4 and up, like delicious Ollie Focus Pops or Ollie Mellow Pops for kids. And for parents, try 3 new Brainy Chews to help you focus, chill out, or get energized. Find these cognitive health buddies for the whole fam at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Straight from the source tonight, hurtling toward nearly a $500 million deadline, the attorney general who sued Trump is now warning an appeals court not to let him off the hook. And Hunter Biden didn't show up to today's impeachment hearing on Capitol Hill, but a whole bunch of crazy did, including a congressman disguised as Vladimir Putin and a witness who testified from prison. Yes, really. Also, the big dance is finally here. So is one of basketball's greatest players, Charles Barkley. We're about to go head-to-head about my bracket. We'll see what he thinks. I'm Caitlin Collins, and this is The Source. Everywhere Donald Trump looks tonight, he is running short on cash, both personally and politically. New numbers just in tonight from the Trump campaign and his joint fundraising committees show that together they brought in $20.3 million last month and entered this month with a combined $41.9 million cash on hand. That puts them far behind the $53 million that President Biden and Democrats raised in February and the massive $155 million that he and his committees have in cash on hand. There's a high-dollar fundraiser, I should note, for Trump next month with some of his party's wealthiest backers, but he doesn't have nearly that kind of time when it comes to his personal financial problems. There are just 5 days to go before Trump could have his prized assets seized, his bank accounts frozen, or potentially both if he can't put up his $464 million bond in his civil fraud case. Panic is not just setting in privately, as I reported here last night. It's on full display today on Trump's Truth Social account, where he has furiously been accusing the attorney general who sued him of, quote, stealing his money. Right now, he is still counting on an appeals court to help save him here. But Letitia James, that attorney general, is pushing back, casting doubt on his claims this week that he can't find anyone to underwrite that bond. She's suggesting that the court should disregard those claims about insurance companies telling him no, and instead suggesting that he should try to get smaller bonds, $100 or $200 million apiece. She's also questioning why Trump is unable to use his real estate assets as collateral. That has prompted a fiery response from Trump's attorney today, who claimed that James is, quote, misrepresenting the facts and accused her of a brazen abuse of power. Though this judgment, I should note, was issued by a judge and a court, not by the attorney general. Trump has lashed out at that judge as well. What's clear tonight is that Trump isn't a real bind, something that his own allies are acknowledging tonight privately as they're wondering what exactly he's going to do. We do know what James has said she'll do.
We are prepared to make sure that the judgment is paid to New Yorkers. And yes, I look at 40 Wall Street each and every day.
Those are some of Trump's properties. And despite what Trump has been saying privately and on Truth Social, when he's in front of the cameras, he said that he has no concerns.
We have a lot of cash and we have a great company, but they want to take it away, or at least take the cash element away. Billions of dollars in value, billions of dollars in properties, but they'd like to take the cash away so I can't use it on the campaign. And this is just a corrupt group of people. We'll see how the courts rule on it. I'll be guided by the courts.
The question is whether that guidance leads to an appeals court saving him before Monday when James can start collecting. Joining me here tonight is the former lead prosecutor on special counsel Robert Mueller's team, Andrew Weissman, who is also the co-author of the new book, The Trump Indictments, that has some great commentary walking people through those. We'll get to the book in a moment. It's great to have you here on The Source. in this predicament that Trump finds himself in, I mean, it's an incredibly difficult one with not much time left to figure it out.
Well, one thing that's worth noting is this is atypical of what happens in a civil case when you have a judgment. Two, the attorney general has actually already extended some leeway because the judgment is actually enforceable on the day that it was rendered. The 30-day period is because the attorney general said, as a matter of grace, I'm giving you 30 days. Now, Donald Trump, as is his right, has asked the court, the appellate courts, to somehow give him relief, and we'll see what happens there. But I think that is sort of one of his only legal options at this point, is to see whether the Court of Appeals is going to give him relief. Other than that, it appears, as you noted, that he may just be over-leveraged, that the reason he is not able to actually come up with the money is he doesn't have it.
What do you make of the fact that if he doesn't have it, you know, he testified in that deposition that he had $400 million in cash on hand, but the fact that they came to the courts this week to say, we can't find anyone to do this when they've had that 30-day grace period. I mean, she seems to be thinking they're playing games here.
Unclear. I would think, first, with respect to the $400 million, some questions that I would have is, first, he did have to put about $100 million of that for the E. Jean Carroll judgment. So that's now we're down to $300 million. But a lot of times when you get a loan, a bank may say, in order for me to give you this loan, I need just not just collateral, but you have to keep a certain amount of cash on hand. So that may be, in essence, pledged. Like, he may not be able to use that in some other way without defaulting on another loan. And we know that there are many loans that appear to be outstanding based on his own, you know, reports of what he has.
What she is suggesting today is that if he can't do it, that he should either hand his properties over to the court, that he should kind of get smaller loans and piece them together. I mean, is that something he could feasibly do even in the next several days?
Well, yes, he could get smaller amounts. He could get what's called a letter of credit and put the whatever equity he has, if there is equity. That's a big, seems to be a big if. If he has equity, he could use that to get a letter of credit. It's the way to think of that is if you own a home and you get a mortgage, that's a way essentially making your home liquid. And he's saying that's the problem, is that I have all this real estate, but it's not liquid.
Yeah.
That didn't fly with me because I'm like, there's a way to make that liquid, which is you tell a bank, fine, give me a mortgage and you will have a lien on the home. The other way is he finds a third party. That is the one that's raising, for me and I think a lot of people, national security concerns, because you really don't want somebody who's running for president and may be the president to have hundreds of millions of reasons to be beholden to somebody who has, you know, put up the bond essentially for him.
And that seems to be a real likelihood. I mean, I heard last night from sources that his team was reaching out to wealthy supporters. And obviously that has been a prospect that's been raised as well as, do they go to a foreign national and ask them to back this up?
So the way I look at it, I was the FBI, I was the general counsel, but everybody who is in the Department of Justice and the intelligence community has to get a clearance in order to see top secret, secret, classified information. If I was beholden to someone to the tune of hundreds of millions of dollars, particularly if they were a foreign national, the chances of my getting clearance would be zero. Just wouldn't happen because there's too much of a risk. And particularly, you know, there are obviously many foreign adversaries of this country that might view this as an opportunity. And that, you know, would be antithetical to our national security interests.
Yeah, it's pretty remarkable to see a presumptive presidential nominee in that situation where that could happen. We're waiting to see. And you've written this book. You're a co-author on the book. It's on the Trump indictments, kind of laying out all of the cases and with helpful commentary, because it is so much for people to sort through. One thing that I was thinking about today is, you know, these are all the criminal cases against him. This case that he's dealing with today is a civil one, which some people question, should it have been criminal instead of civil? But right now, where it stands with the landscape, this may be the only, you know, punishment that's enacted against him by a prosecutor, because the other trials may not even happen before the election.
That's absolutely right. And that this is a form of accountability. It is not criminal accountability, it is civil accountability. But, you know, from Donald Trump's perspective, it still is, it's not a punishment, but it still is inflicting some recompense for people who were harmed. Remember, this was a judge who found that this happened. And there was proof. And remember, Donald Trump was able to be there and testify and cross-examine. So he had all of the due process that is given to somebody in the civil justice system. Unsurprisingly, though, he is attacking all of these cases, whether civil or criminal, because, you know, that's the one check against his power. So he obviously wants to say it's all unfair.
Yeah, and one of, you know, the people who submitted to the courts this week about that was someone who actually appeared at that trial. The other thing you write, though, in this book is you talk about Jack Smith, special counsel now, who's on the classified documents case and the election interference case in Washington. You say that he was tailor-made for this, that both cases were clearly going to be extremely strong, but only an experienced prosecutor like Smith could get them quickly to the finish line. So quickly in the finish line that caught my eye, because obviously that is the holdup now and the questions of whether or not it actually gets to the finish line.
Yeah, but maybe one thing to note about Jack Smith, you know, because I've known him for years, one thing that does separate him from the other prosecutors is not just that he has a lot of experience, because so does Alvin Bragg, so does Fani Willis, but he has international experience. He was at the International Criminal Court. And one of the things that we do write about in this book is that we think of this as something that's so unique in America, and it is. We've never been in a situation with a former president being charged and being trying to be held to account. But as we pointed out, this is not unique in the country here, but it's in the world. It happens all the time. France, Argentina, Italy, they have figured out how to hold corrupt leaders to account. So we are really, in many ways, you know, a backwater where we really have a lot to learn from how other countries do it. And I think that's where Jack Smith, I think, comes at it with that global perspective and thinking about that if we do not do this successfully, we actually turn ourselves into a banana republic.
Andrew Weissman, great to have you here on The Source. Thank you for joining us. My next guest was one of the first to warn about what we were just talking about there, this national security risk that we could see with this kind of debt for the former president. Former U.N. ambassador and Trump's former national security advisor, John Bolton, is here tonight on The Source. Ambassador Bolton, great to have you back here. Do you agree with Andrew Weissman that Trump's financial predicament that he's in makes him a security risk for the U.S.?
Well, I think all kinds of unscrupulous people are circling around this problem, some of them foreign, some of them domestic. And I think that the state of New York here really has him in a unique position for any former president. And it does raise questions. And whatever bond he eventually puts up, I think, ought to be very thoroughly scrutinized. But I think it's also important for the attorney general in New York to be very careful about how she proceeds, unless she wants to risk making Trump capitalize off his financial difficulty the same way he's capitalized politically off his four indictments. For example, you showed a clip of her saying she's looking at 40 Wall Street every day. Really, she should stop talking about this. She should say, I'll speak through my office's pleadings in court. Otherwise, she is creating the atmosphere that allows Trump to benefit politically and actually to raise money for his campaign off her actions.
Yeah, he's certainly done that. And I've heard this argument from people in Trump's orbit. The other question, though, is if, you know, and notwithstanding her public comments, but if she were to wait to start to try to seize his assets, or, you know, he already got this 30-day grace period. I mean, couldn't that be also seen as the reverse, that he would be getting special treatment because of his status as a presidential candidate and a former president?
Well, I'm certainly no expert on New York procedure in a case like this, but I think it's a lot less. She could protect New York's legitimate interest here in ways a lot less intrusive than going up and trying to seize the properties. I would think if she put a judgment lien on any of the properties in New York, certainly she'd have to do something different for properties out of state. But if she were to put liens on every piece of property he's got, every bank account he's got, that would send an enormous signal. It would render those assets utterly illiquid to any potential buyer. And I think that's a lot less dramatic than having New York cops going up trying to get into 40 Wall Street. She just needs to act in a prudent fashion and not act like she's trying to persecute Trump, because that will feed Trump's narrative that he's just the victim of the deep state's persecution. New York has a legitimate interest here. She should act prudently to take care of that legitimate interest, and don't overstep.
Well, Ambassador Bolton, something you just said, you talked about unscrupulous figures, both foreign and domestic, circling around Trump right now. His attorney, who argued and lost this case, I should note, was asked earlier today about whether or not he could be seeking out support from a foreign country to help him. This is what she said.
Is there any effort on the part of your team to secure this money through another country, Saudi Arabia or Russia?
Well, there's rules and regulations that are public. I can't speak about strategy that requires certain things, and we have to follow those rules.
I mean, she didn't say no.
I don't know what that answer means. I mean, I think that I would certainly give a warning to any bank in any country friendly to the United States, or to the government of any country friendly to the United States. Financing Donald Trump's bond problem here is not in their interest. And he may be trying to pursue it, but I would just say to them, I would stay away from this one.
I think also the prospect of if a foreign national or a foreign government does come in and step in to help Trump here. You know, I was thinking back to exactly what we've been hearing from Republicans on the Hill about this exact scenario. Listen to what they've warned about.
We tried to warn the American public that this man and his family had received millions of dollars from countries. They were adversaries of ours, that if he were elected, that he would be compromised and our national security would be compromised.
It is very, poses serious national security risk. And now we have a president who could be compromised by foreign adversaries.
He's compromised because he's taken so much money.
Of course, they're all talking about Joe Biden and their investigation into him that hasn't, you know, proven anything concrete or tied to him. But are they going to say the same thing if Donald Trump does ultimately seek out a foreign national or foreign government to help pay and underwrite his bond here?
Well, I think they should. I mean, one of the problems of the aberrant effects that Trump has had, the distorting effects on the political system, is that he essentially argues different rules should apply to him than to everybody else. And, you know, the standard of integrity in politics is you apply the same rule to people of your party as you do to people of the other party when they're in similar circumstances. And I think to the extent Trump is looking overseas, he's asking for exactly those kinds of attacks from Democrats. He ought to get it from Republicans, too.
Ambassador John Bolton, great to have you on the show. Thank you.
Thank you.
So the question here is, realistically, is there a way out for Donald Trump before Monday? We're going to explore the options that he has for potentially digging himself out of this, including one you may not have thought of. Plus, a house with a white picket fence, long a symbol of the American dream. The question is now, is that dream slipping away? What the Fed's latest decision today could mean for home buyers and home sellers. Josh Flagg from Million Dollar Listing is here to join us.
I'm Dr. Sanjay Gupta, CNN's chief medical correspondent. This week on Chasing Life.
Lately, we have been paying attention to a very different virus, bird flu, which is caused by the H5N1 virus. If you start to hear that it's circulating in pigs, that would be a concern.
That means I would go from sleeping with one eye open to one and a half eyes open. Yeah, that would make me very concerned.
Listen to Chasing Life, wherever you get your podcasts.
Former President Trump has been using his own social media site, as you can see here, to blast that $500 million judgment against him as the bond is coming due. But here's a question worth asking tonight. Could he actually use his stake in that company, Truth Social, to help secure that bond before Monday's deadline? His stake could be worth billions of dollars, as we know. Remember, Trump could sell off properties that he holds dear, like 40 Wall Street or Trump Tower, to get the cash. But the deadline is coming fast, and he needs options. Here to break down what Trump can and maybe cannot do is former Assistant U.S. Attorney for the Southern District of New York and CNN's senior legal analyst, Ellie Honig. Ellie, I think the context here is that Truth Social has a pretty critical merger that is being voted on in 48 hours. But could this actually somehow be a realistic option for him in all of this?
So believe it or not, the very same vehicle that Trump is using to lash out here could actually potentially bail him out. Now, I spent a good chunk of today talking to bonding experts. It's actually pretty interesting, I have to say. And here's the deal. There is a vote of shareholders happening on Friday. And this merger has already gotten approval from the SEC, from the mm-hmm. Securities and Exchange Commission. If it goes through on Friday, that will enable True Social to go public, meaning their stock will be available for sale on the trading commodities markets. Donald Trump is, of course, the largest shareholder in True Social, yeah. and his holdings are valued at somewhere in the range of $2 to $4 billion. Now, I asked these bonding experts, I said, do you normally accept stock in exchange for you posting a bond? And they both said, yes, we ordinarily would. But there's one big problem. There's two big problems. One is there's some skepticism as to whether True Social is actually going to be worth that $4 billion valuation. They're not profitable. They don't show the signs that you would normally want in a profitable stock. The other problem is timing. Because even if this goes through, even if Trump suddenly becomes $4 billion worth of shares wealthier, he can't do anything with them. They're locked down for 6 months. His workaround, though, is he can ask for special permission to get rid of them earlier than 6 months. That'll be up to the board.
Well, I mean, what's the likelihood that he could get that? And even if he did, I mean, he wouldn't immediately have access to that, right?
Right. So that's the big problem. It's called a lockdown provision. So meaning because what they don't want at True Social is their biggest shareholder on day one to dump all his stocks. That
right.
would be disastrous.
That's why these exist.
Right, exactly. So what he would have to do is go back to the shareholders and say, I want special permission to waive, to get rid of that holding requirement. And they could vote on it. And maybe not all of his stock. Maybe he could say, look, I just need to free up, let's say, $500 million worth. So there's an actual potential out there for Donald Trump somehow through True Social.
So this deadline is Monday. You know, this could potentially be one option. Maybe it's too close to that deadline to actually be worked out. But can you just walk us through, I mean, what does it look like starting on Monday? Obviously, Letitia James, the attorney general, is not going to show up with a sheriff outside Trump Tower, I imagine. But yeah. but what does it actually look like when we hit that deadline?
So it's not quite like on TV, right, where the sheriffs just go in and say, we own this now. But if Donald Trump fails to post the bond or if the appeals court does not reduce the bond, then Letitia James gains the ability on Monday to start executing the judgment, meaning to start collecting the money. She can tap into any of his cash accounts. She can start the process of seizing those buildings. But it's complicated because Trump's not the sole owner on a lot of those buildings. He's not even the majority owner on some of those buildings. It takes time. It has to go through a process. There's other entities that have rights in those buildings. So it would take time, but she could start the process of seizing that judgment. Now, it's important to note, he still can appeal. Appeal has nothing to do with the bond. He still has his appeal right. It's just a question of, will the judgment be executed while he's appealing?
Well, in his complaint and what he has pushed back and what his attorneys have been saying to us is that he sells some of these properties to get the money to make the bond. Well, then what if he wins the appeal and then yeah. he's sold these properties for less than they're worth or less what he could have gotten because he was doing so quickly?
Yeah, and the AG's answer in the brief filed today was tough luck. I mean, that's how it goes. If you want to post a bond, if you want to hold us off, if you want to hold the AG back from starting to execute this, you got to do what you got to do. And he might well take a loss in the process here.
Yeah, and I think the other part of this that, you know, we were speaking of is that he's got a lot of wealthy friends
yeah.
that they've been reaching out to, kind of seeing what the supporters say. But people who are wealthy for a reason. They're not necessarily eager to put up this much money for a bond that they're not necessarily sure they'll get back.
Yeah, he's waiting on a cash infusion. Maybe that'll come through Truth Social. It could come from somebody else, but it's important to know. We won't necessarily know this. Whatever transaction there is between Donald Trump and the bonding companies, that's private. So he may get this infusion of cash that we may not know where it comes from. Now, you and other reporters will certainly be asking him, rightly.
But we won't necessarily find out. It won't be public
no,
where
it's
it
not,
came from.
Exactly. I mean, perhaps the court can inquire, say, I have some questions about this, but it's really not the court's business. As long as the court has the bond, they're not going to dig into where did this money come from. So it's possible that he says, I came up with the money, and we in the public may not know exactly how. And as your prior guests were saying, there's a security risk in
that. The other thing that you just mentioned that piqued my interest is, so she can just go into his bank accounts starting on Monday.
Yeah. If there's no bond posted, then yes, she can go in and say, this money is mine now. That's why this is so important for Donald Trump, because if he posts a bond, then she has to wait until the appeal's over to start doing that. If he fails to post a bond, Monday, it is on.
Ellie Honig, we are going to be counting down. We will keep you close by and
developing
also your
story.
Bond consultants. Coming up here, an empty witness chair, a Putin mask, and witness testimony from prison. Yes, I am describing a congressional impeachment hearing today. Welcome to Capitol Hill. I'll be joined by someone who had a front row seat to all of that craziness right after a quick break. A sitting congressman wore a Halloween mask to work, and an empty chair was left for the president's adult son. That was today's Biden impeachment hearing that was filled with theatrics and shenanigans from all sides of the political aisle. And yet again, House Republicans failed to present any evidence that President Biden financially benefited from his son's businesses.
And what crime do you have you witnessed?
How much time do I have to go through it?
It is simple. You name the crime. Did you watch him steal something?
Corruption statutes, RICO and conspiracy.
What is it? What is the crime, sir?
Specifically. You asked me to answer the question. I answered the question.
No.
RICO, you're obviously not familiar with. Corruption statutes.
Excuse me, sir. RICO is not a crime. It is a category.
That was Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and Tony Bobulinski, who is the former Biden business associate, family business associate, I should note. Republicans also presented a witness who testified from federal prison where he is serving time for fraud. Meanwhile, Democrats countered with their own witness. You might remember this guy, Lev Parnas. He's the former Rudy Giuliani associate who was recently released from prison himself after serving time for campaign finance and wire fraud.
The impeachment proceedings that bring us here now are predicated on false information spread by the Kremlin. Everyone involved knew they were sharing lies.
Now, it was notable that Democrats invited Parnas today to come and testify at this hearing, given they have long questioned his credibility.
Lev Parnas, who was Rudy Giuliani's right-hand man, a fairy tale so preposterous that one of its main authors, Lev Parnas, has now disowned and repudiated it. The president's team, Rudy Giuliani and Parnas and Fruman, engaged in a smear campaign.
And we are joined now by the congressman that you see there, the ranking member of the House Oversight Committee, Maryland Democrat Jamie Raskin. Congressman, welcome back. I mean, given how you yourself have described his credibility, or I guess I should say lack thereof, why should Americans trust this guy?
Well, he's another refugee in exile from Trump land, somebody like Cassidy Hutchinson or Michael Cohen or General Milley or Mark Kelly, even Mike Pence, who said he couldn't bring himself to endorse Donald Trump after everything we'd seen. And the Republicans were attacking him for having lied. But as I said today, they weren't attacking him because he lied for Donald Trump. They were attacking him because he stopped lying for Donald Trump and started telling America the truth. And they didn't contradict a single assertion that Lev Parnas made today. What he told was the story of how he and Rudy Giuliani went globetrotting all over the world looking for dirt on Joe Biden in advance of the 2020 presidential campaign, and they couldn't find anything. He said they turned over every stone, they talked to, you know, every mobster and government official that they could, and they couldn't find anything. So then they ended up with completely fabricated, confected evidence. And he talked about how they knowingly spread lies. Giuliani knowingly spread lies, and he participated in it. And he said he paid his price for it. He went to jail for campaign finance violations for illegal donations to pro-Trump super PACs. But he said he's had enough of that world, and he wants to tell America the truth. And there are a lot of people in his situation, and they're going to help us get out of this culture of deceit and corruption that Donald Trump has sunk us into.
Yeah, I mean, the difference between Lev Parnas and Cassidy Hutchinson, General Milley, Mike Pence, is that they didn't go to prison for campaign finance and fraud and all of that gallivanting around Eastern Europe with Rudy Giuliani. But the other witness who was there today, Tony Bobulinski, that we just heard from in that exchange with AOC, he is the former Biden family business associate. And at one point in his testimony, he specifically accused you of lying. This is what he said.
They continue to lie directly to the American people without hesitation and remorse. Rep. Dan Goldman and Jamie Raskin, both lawyers, and Mr. Goldman, a former prosecutor with the SDNY from New York, will continue to lie today in this hearing and then go straight to the media to tell more lies.
Do you want to respond to that?
Well, you know, it seems to be a matter of habit and second nature now for people in MAGA world to call other people liars. There used to be something of a public convention or taboo about that. But in any event, I don't mind if he would just specify what the lie is, but he never stated what he said I was lying about. He's accused the Wall Street Journal of being liars. He's accused the FBI of being liars. He accused Cassidy Hutchinson of being a liar for saying that he had a secret meeting with Mark Meadows where he was wearing a ski mask. And then he called her a liar, and then she produced the photograph. And that was displayed by Robert Garcia at today's hearing. So I'm not in the business of calling people's liars. That guy had, you know, he had very little credibility going in, but it doesn't make any difference because he didn't say anything that remotely implicated President Biden in a high crime or misdemeanor. And this is an impeachment investigation, and he had no impeachable offenses, no evidence that he was talking about. And the guy's obviously, you know, just trying to get famous, and the Republicans are happy to advance him. Donald Trump brought him as a personal guest to the presidential debate in 2020, and he denied remembering who brought him.
Yeah, I was there, and I remember that. And Chairman Comer said at the end of today's hearing that he is now going to invite President Biden to come and testify. I mean, this investigation has been going on for months now. What does that say to you about how much longer it's going to be going on?
I mean, the impeachment bus is running completely on empty. By the end of it, there were maybe one or two members on the Republican side of the aisle. Their own members have completely defected. You've got Republican congressmen like Ken Buck basically just saying, give up the ghost. He's resigning from Congress, saying he won't participate in this, you know, unconstitutional exercise. So there's nothing there. There's no votes on the Republican side to get it over the top. And there's no evidence upon which you could base an impeachment investigation. So they don't have a legislative agenda. They're trying to distract people from the fact that they're blockading aid to Ukraine, which is really the main function of all of this. Vladimir Putin doesn't want us getting $60 billion to the besieged democratic nation of Ukraine, which is trying to fend off Putin's filthy invasion and his kidnapping and his rape and his destruction of civilian buildings and people. And they don't want us dealing with the humanitarian crisis in Gaza, this, you know, Israeli security. They don't want us to deal with any of it. And Donald Trump essentially blew up the foreign aid package, including the border and immigration provisions that were coming out of the Senate. So it's a chaos party, but luckily it's shrinking. And as Mr. Parnas told us today, it operates like a cult, and it's a real act of will and courage to get out of the cult. And you should see the way that our colleagues treat people who have defected from the cult. They treat them like apostates, but there are millions of them across the country now who don't want to have anything to do with Donald Trump and his games anymore.
Yeah, and you mentioned Putin. I should note it was one of your Democratic colleagues wearing that mask and walking into the room today. Congressman Jamie Raskin, as always, thank you for your time.
You bet, Caitlin.
Ahead, between interest rates and a major realtor settlement that happened last week, can you finally buy that home you've been waiting to buy in one of the toughest housing markets that we have witnessed in a generation? We're going to get some million-dollar advice, hopefully from a million-dollar listing real estate star, after a quick break.
The assignment with me, Audie Cornish.
So there have been arrests, suspensions, disciplinary hearings. They're shutting down graduation events.
At this moment, the part of the protests that are admirable are young people calling attention to atrocities.
Michael Roth is the president of Wesleyan University.
I would like to make a space for them to do that, as long as that space doesn't prevent other people from pursuing their education.
Listen to The Assignment with me, Audie Cornish, on your favorite podcast app.
Stocks on Wall Street surged at an all-time high today, connected to that news that we got from the Federal Reserve that it's expected to cut interest rate three times this year. Of course, that comes after just a few days ago, there was a seismic legal settlement that eliminated that at 6% standard commission fee that you see often with real estate agents, which critics argued that it raised housing prices through the roof and now could help lower them. This move could potentially make buying and selling a home drastically cheaper. Here to explain it all with his thoughts is real estate agent and cast member of Million Dollar Listing Los Angeles, Josh Flagg. And Josh, it's great to have you on. Just first on as everyone is trying to make sense of this from last week, you know, they look at what they spend a year on commissions. I think the New York Times totaled it at about $100 billion. I mean, do you think this is ultimately going to make it easier and less expensive for Americans to buy a home?
No, I don't think it's going to affect it one bit. I mean, commissions, first of all, have been negotiable at all times. And second of all, also I have to add, it's not a set 6%. Certain part of the country is 6%, certain parts it's 5%. The only difference is going to be who pays the commission. Is it going to be the buyer's agent? Is it going to be the buyer or is it going to be the seller that pays the commission? But, you know, we've heard in the news, oh, the buyer's agent is going to go out. No one's going to use them. They're going to go directly from now on because they don't need to pay a commission. That's not accurate. It's just going to be, is the seller of the property paying it or is the buyer paying it?
So what does it change as far as, because the question of, you know, when you say that the buyer's agent will still be there was, does it introduce more competition into the market? Is it easier for tech startups to come into the market? I mean, what does the landscape look like now, though, in the aftermath of this?
I mean, it doesn't really change much. For instance, you know, you could go on any of those websites and hire a, you know, get a broker for, you know, $500 to represent you. You know, it's like, if I needed a really good attorney, you know, I wouldn't hire somebody for $100 an hour. I'd go to Marty Singer or Alan Grubman. It's the same thing. You're getting what you pay for when you hire a real estate agent. First of all, if you go directly for instance, I mean, think about the legal ramifications. You don't really have proper representation. Also, you don't have all the facts about the property. You don't have the comps. You don't know. There's a reason why brokers are hired. So you know where to place your money. What's a good property to buy? All those things. No one in their right mind would ever go and just like, well, I'm just going to look at Sunday open houses and pick something, you know?
Yeah, they obviously, you know, often turn to someone who does it for a living. But on the landscape itself of what we heard from the Federal Reserve today about interest rates, I mean, mortgage rates right now still have been really high. Inventory, it seems, has been pretty low just nationwide. I mean, the American dream has always been thought of as being able to own your own home. And some Americans, you know, say it's out of reach. Do you think that's going to change?
Well, as interest rates come down, it certainly will. You know, it's interesting because I remember a point, you know, 10 years ago when interest rates were at 7% or 8% and the market was flourishing. People were used to that. What happened was all of a sudden it went down to 2% and people got really spoiled. And then that was the new normal. So it's not like we're so out of whack right now at 6%. It's just what it is. But people are just spoiled from, you know, what we had for the last 4 or 5 years. But it will come down. It's just a matter of when. And, you know, hopefully there'll be 3 interest rate, you know, decreases this year. It would have been nice if it happened this month, but it's fine. Once the interest rates come down a little bit, the market will go up.
Yeah. A lot of people looking to that and also looking to you for that. Josh Flagg, great to have you on tonight.
My pleasure. Good to see you.
Speaking of productivity, though, it is about to take a dive for millions of Americans at the office this week because it is time for March Madness. I just finished filling out my brackets, and Charles Barkley is going to join me here, hopefully not to judge it too harshly, right after a quick break. March Madness is in full swing tonight, and I have got a very special guest here to share my predictions for this year's NCAA tournament with 11-time NBA All-Star and the co-host of CNN's King Charles, Charles Barkley himself. This is where I'm going to grill you on Auburn.
Well, Auburn, we got jobbed.
Okay, well, let's talk. Okay, so this is what you have in front of you is my bracket.
Yes.
That I spent hours filling out and selecting these teams. And I feel like I did Auburn a solid. I brought them to the second round.
Well, we're going to get to the Sweet 16. We're going to play UConn. We're going to beat Yale. We always going to beat the smart kids. And then we're probably going to beat San Diego State.
You think so?
I think.
Because I have them losing to San Diego State.
Well, that just means you're wrong. I think our problem is going to start at UConn. Because UConn, they're the heavy, heavy favorite to win this thing.
Yeah.
I think I saw a stat today out of like 10,000 brackets. They're favored in 96% of them.
Wow.
Which they are the best team. I'll admit that. They are the best team. Like every other team in this tournament is good but flawed. UConn they got a terrific coach. And they have an advantage over all these other teams because they won the championship last year. So their confidence is going to be sky high.
Yeah, they're coming into it. Yes. They're coming into it with momentum. I have UConn winning at all.
Well, everybody does.
That's not true. My dad doesn't.
Who do he has winning it?
He hadn't picked yet, but he told me.
Well, tell him I'm going with Arizona. And it's not because I live there.
Because you live there?
No, not because I live there. Arizona, they are really, really good. I think they're going to play UConn in the Final Four. You know, Ashley, you did pretty good, Ashley. I don't think Creighton.
That's where I feel like I might have messed up.
Yeah. Because they're going to lose to Oregon.
Okay, can we talk about how I did for Alabama? Because obviously I have them going further than probably the average bear would, but that's because I'm completely biased in their favor. So I have them beating St. Mary's.
I don't think they in my bracket, I have them losing to St. Mary's. St. Mary's has been one of the best kept secrets in college basketball for the last 10, 15 years. They just couldn't beat Gonzaga. And they finally beat them this year. And I was like, wow, that might be something to take their confidence to another level. But also, Alabama's got a bunch of little dudes out there running around shooting threes.
And but our defense is terrible.
Yes, but also, they won't be intimidating. Because a lot of difference, what people don't understand, the difference in a lot of these schools is size. A lot of guys, you know, some of these smaller schools don't have two or three guys that are 6'9", 6'10", somewhere in that range. So they won't be, St. Mary's will not be physically intimidated playing against Alabama. So that's a huge advantage for St. Mary's.
Yeah, but they're going to be spiritually intimidated. I mean, one reason we wanted to have you on, obviously, is you know what this is like. You've played in this tournament.
Yeah.
And, I mean, what is it like in these days as you're leading up to the biggest moment?
I say I've been so lucky and blessed. The coolest thing I've ever done in my life is the Olympics. I was blessed to play in two Olympics, which is by far and away the greatest sporting event in the world. Television does not do the Olympic justice.
Yeah.
This is a close second. It is so awesome because this sounds stupid. Everybody's got a college. And when your college starts doing well, it's just this thing that goes on. And you got little schools like Northwestern. They got a good team. Their coach is terrific. If they were to win a couple games, everybody at Northwestern, whoever went to school there, are going to be great.
Yeah.
Same thing at Auburn. When we won the SEC tournament last week, it was just a great thing. Same thing, like Michigan State. Everybody loves Michigan State. But I'm telling you, don't sleep on St. Mary's. You know, Alabama, if this was a football game.
I say don't sleep on Alabama.
Well, listen, if this was football, Alabama would be heavily favored over St. Mary's. But they're not. But think about this, though. You know, there's a lot of pressure on Purdue.
Yeah.
They've been the number one seed like 2 years in a row, maybe three. And
well, that's why there can always be like a crazy moment. I mean, what do you think's going to – what are you predicting could happen?
Well, the whole thing is crazy, Caitlin, because the thing is the one game, anything can happen. See, the beauty of this tournament is, like in the NBA, the best team's always going to win 4 out of 7. Like, a team could get lucky one game.
Yeah.
They could get lucky 2 games, and rarely 3 games, but they can get lucky for 2 games. In a one-game scenario, like, let's take one of your picks. If UConn and Northwestern played a 7-game series, mm-hmm. UConn would win every time. But for one game, Northwestern can beat UConn. That's what makes this tournament so exciting every year.
Yeah, I love the narrative looking at those stories and also the players.
Oh, it's unbelievable. I told you, this other than the Olympics, it's the second best sporting event I've ever been involved in my life.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Well, that's because Auburn hasn't been to very many national championships on the football side, right?
Well, you know, y'all not going anymore. Hey, thank you, Coach Saban. Thank you for retiring. You're the greatest coach ever. Thank you for retiring. You should have came to the party we had down at Auburn.
It's amazing how everyone loves it now that that he's left us. Yeah. Charles Barkley, great to have you on. I know your show's coming up. You interviewed Oprah, and I cannot wait to watch that.
It's going to be fun.
When you work next level. And when you play next level. And when it's time to sleep, Sleep Number smart beds are designed to embrace your uniqueness, providing you with high-quality sleep every night. Sleep next level. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, the Queen Sleep Number C4 smart bed is only $1,599. Save $300 for a limited time, only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com. Prices higher in Alaska and Hawaii.
Now streaming exclusively on Max, a new CNN flash doc about the album that has Nashville talking, Call Me Country, Beyonce and Nashville's Renaissance. Watch it at max.com/callmecountry. Max subscription required.